episode 22 of 30 Minute Gamers. It's me, Mike Luckett, and my co-host, Adam Ducker. Hello, Adam.
I don't know where the hell that intro came from, Mike.
Neither do I. It was kind of a spur-of-the-moment thing. Just thought about it. Thought, you know what? I'm going to go crazy.
It sounds like we're doing a rodeo special or something. today we're going to be doing commentary on the 27th annual rodeo down here in Texas.
Yeah, just trying to get the vibe, you know, with you moving to Canada, kind of America, even though I know that we don't want to be associated as being a part of America, but it's the same area.
I don't think you can say that.
So when I go to Canada
for your
inevitable wedding and everything else, I don't say that. Will I be kicked out, will I?
Yeah.
Hung. Okay.
Because hanging's still legal there.
Oh, is it?
It's not at all. Makes it sounding barbaric.
Yeah, I got scared then. So, this week, Adam, what are we going to talk about?
We mentioned it last week.
Mutathra.
It's been on everyone's mouths.
Mouths?
That sounds dodgy. Everyone's been talking about it. It is Mass Effect 3.
Not quite everyone. There is people out there that don't play Mass Effect.
Like who? What are they playing?
Just people that don't like it. Sci-fi and RPGs.
Yeah, I guess so. In fact, our good friend Cookie Man, he's not playing it.
That's not very good. We can...
Okay. We should really say right now, before we get cracking, there's going to be spoilers.
There will be.
It's going to be spoilerific. Not first.
Not straight away.
We'll signpost people.
Oh, yeah.
The first part of our little chat is going to be spoiler free, and unless you don't want to know how the game actually works, like what the controls are, or some of the space travel mechanics, you don't want to listen to that, and then we'll shift towards some more spoiler heavy stuff.
We will, with a big warning, we'll make it obvious.
So, they built on the Mass Effect mechanics of three games, and this is what they've come up with. So, what do you like, Mike? What didn't you like? What is up there as a good mechanic?
The mechanics, there's a few big likes, to be critique. Things with Mass Effect 1, less so in Mass Effect 2, but it was still a slight issue about the same environments being used as a general game thing. I don't recall any section of Mass Effect 3 which was like a recycled area, like a building where you went and rescued someone.
The only thing where it vaguely sort of happens is the N7 missions using the multiplayer maps. But then you're only ever going to visit them one time during the single player.
Yeah, not quite the same.
Yeah.
Not
well. You're talking about Mass Effect 1 where you explore planets and you go to the exact same structure.
Yep. Do the exact same thing. Time
and time again.
Yeah.
Time after time.
That didn't sound very good.
No.
No.
So they've mixed up a few things. The space travelling, instead of laboriously scanning planets with a retina, you now will travel into space and you have like this.
You scan like
this like esoteric thing that goes boo!
Yeah.
And scans everywhere.
Yeah.
And then anything that's on a planet will come up with a little red mark with some weird space language on it and you totter over to the planet, do the scan as it was, but all you're looking for is that one little white mark.
Yeah.
The things you're collecting are different to last time. You're collecting minerals to build up your ship, now you're collecting war assets.
Yeah.
That will aid the war effort.
So you still got credits and stuff on sometimes, don't you?
Credits and fuel on occasion. Tended only to come from the random derelict bits you'd find.
Lots of ships destroyed.
Yeah.
With the general theme of the game of people dying.
And then they added that Reaper bit, which is a bit. Feels a bit arbitrary and pointless in a lot of ways.
It was cool at first.
Yeah, until you realise. A, if you're quick enough, you can outrun them like a piece of piss.
Yep.
And then secondly, if you die, it actually doesn't matter because it just restarts you from the exact same point.
Yep. And there's even little tricks you could do as well, weren't there?
Go on, you share your pro tip with us.
But pro tip. Obviously, if you scan the area and you knew where something was, but then obviously the Reapers got you out of the system, when you're hovering over the system before you press A or X to go into it, just position the ship at the angle you want it to face. So you click on it, and then that's the area of the solar system that you come in.
So you
just made it really easy.
Go do a quick scan, and then
stick your fingers up the Reapers.
Bob out, go back in, collect it, bob back out.
Yeah.
Jobs are good, and do that.
Going, way!
Do that four times, and you are laughing.
Yeah.
in the run-up to the game's release, they made a big deal about how they were going to try and find the right balance between the shooting and the RPG stuff, because Mass Effect 1 was probably a more RPG-like affair.
Yeah.
Had a stringent infantry system, which they got rid of for Mass Effect 2.
It had so many... It was almost too much, because you had that many guns,
and
just different stuff. There was a lot in Mass Effect 1.
So now they've changed it completely again, and I think we're both on the same page about this. We're both quite fans of how the inventory system works with your weapons and stuff.
Yeah. It's got a good mix, you know, it gives you... You'll have several different weapons of each class to choose from, which is pretty cool. And you had the weapon attachments. There's like 5 or 6, I think, for each gun, you know, which increase damage or increase accuracy or bullet penetration, but then you'd lose speed.
Mm-hmm.
There's a few. Nice little cool. Still give you some options, some things to choose from.
And they still had that risk-reward element there with the weight, which was handled well, because, I mean...
That was pretty cool. I didn't get that at first. It took me a little bit of time to think.
Yeah.
Because... Made sense. Mass Effect 2, obviously, I always played as a soldier class.
Mm-hmm.
So I had my assault rifle, my sniper rifle, my pistol, my submachine gun, and my shotgun. But I only really used like my assault rifle and sniper rifle, sometimes a shotgun for close quarters.
Yeah.
But not very often. But yeah, the risk reward, you were explaining, Adam, before I just started going on a little rant-a-thon.
So rather than having like a number that's your weight, say like in Skyrim, the weight of stuff you can carry based on your stamina.
Yeah.
Each weapon has its own rate, its own weight, and that fills up a meter, and that meter affects how fast you can regenerate your powers.
Yeah.
So it's a pretty clever way of doing it. Like, the meter's easy to read, and you either have a plus or a minus number. If you've got a plus percentage, it means you're quicker at recharging powers. You've got a minus percentage. So you can go very weapon heavy if you choose to.
But then you'd take a while to
take a while to regenerate powers, which is what I did at first without realising, because I kept thinking, right, I definitely need to take a shotgun in case I run out of ammo for this.
Mm-hmm.
But then I stopped doing that. I was like, no, I can easily get by. Play as a sentinel, so I've got enough powers that I can easily get by on if I'm a bit loose on ammo, combining my powers with my squad mate's powers. So I stopped doing that and ended up with something like I was on plus 108. And then they do clever other things, adding little, you can buy that power up that will give you weight as an attachment.
Yeah.
Yep. So you end up with weapons that weigh next to nothing.
Yeah.
It's just a really clever way of getting around.
And you can upgrade
that.
Your weapons as well in the armory section of the Normandy.
Yeah.
Which obviously decreased weight, increased accuracy, damage, etc.
Really clever job of keeping that RPG element of the weight thing.
Yeah.
But without it being too intrusive, it was just that 1 meter piece of piss. A lot more simple.
It was very straightforward.
Yeah.
Awesome.
I think in terms of, without being too spoilery, because we're still not spoiling, where it sends you in the story, you got to go to a lot of key locations that we've long wanted to visit in the series.
Epic.
A lot of species homeworlds explored fully.
Yeah.
Really nice to finally get onto those planets and see where they're all from.
Yeah, set pieces in the game, just in general, I think piss over the other two games completely.
Even from the very start.
Yeah.
No spoiler that the Reapers are coming to Earth.
Yeah, they've made that pretty obvious as the point of the game. As soon as it starts.
Yeah.
That's it.
But that scene in general, they pull off superbly, I think.
Yep.
You definitely get a sense of like, oh shit.
Of the world going to shit around you. Yeah.
And then they carry on through the desperate situations they put you on the other planets.
Yeah, it's just, again, without going into detail, it's just how they manage to set the set pieces up.
Mm-hmm.
It's really kind of epic, and you do feel very doom and gloom and, oh shit, I need to succeed, and what the hell's going on? Buildings are blowing up and stuff around you. And
excellent. I think they do a very good job of weaving the story so that you get natural opportunities to meet characters that you've met in the previous games.
Yeah.
There's two ways to do it. Some people you can take along for the ride in your squad. Other people
become a war asset, don't they?
Become a war asset, or some other people you just talk to.
Yeah. And if for whatever reason you've not played Mass Effect yet, you don't really know what we're talking about with war assets. It's kind of also the general theme of the game is Earth is fucked, Reapers are taking over, you need to get, you know, you basically need to get as many people as possible to join you in the war, really, isn't it?
Yeah.
And obviously, throughout the game, you build up the military force, and has quite a big emphasis on that. Decisions you make in the game obviously affect on who joins your side and what strength do they join your side. You know, there's a lot of little things, and it covers a few topics as well, which have been obviously covered in the other games in a lot more detail.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and things like that, and obviously have it come to a resolution.
Fruition.
Yeah. Which is great, and just a lot of things I just loved about the game.
I'll definitely make the most of the codec feature. There's plenty of stuff to read in there.
Oh yeah, it's a good in-depth stuff to read.
Lots of things you do in the game have a knock-on effect, and your little war assets that will update over time. And there's some people might be disappointed that you don't see the actions of them, but there's so many things happening, so many little story tidbits happening all the time to your war assets. It's hard to keep track of it all.
Yeah, it was cool as well, getting private messages. Like, I remember getting some private messages from like decisions you'd made in like Mass Effect 2, basically saying, yeah, I'm still around, thanks for doing X, Y, and Z. We're with you. And then you get, obviously, it'd be added as a war asset. Interesting topic for Mass Effect 3. Obviously, it was a bit mixed reactions when it was announced, was the multiplayer.
Yeah.
I mean, I know when I first heard about it, I was very much of the, what the fuck? Mass Effect is a single-player game. Why are they putting that in?
I think their reasoning was good. They kind of worked it like they were saying, yeah, you're going to be doing these missions that are affecting this score. It kind of did make sense that it would be other people other than Shepard in on the war effort. Whether you actually need to be playing them is another matter.
Yeah.
And the dumb thing is, we've discussed this, is it doesn't fill up the same meter. You have your assets meter, whatever it is. Effective military strength is what the war assets fill up. Then you have total military strength, which is your actual score that has a meaningful impact. Now, you can fill the total military strength by finding every single war asset in the game and making all the right decisions about who joins you. But the other way to do it is to play the bloody multiplayer and fill up another meter called the Galactic Readiness, which then adds on to that total too.
Yeah.
It's a bit of a pain in the jacksie.
It was. When I first played the multiplayer first few times, I was thinking, actually, this is pretty cool. I didn't actually play with friends, it was with randomers, but it's basically a team of four on a small map, kind of Gears of War Horde style.
Yep.
You know, wave of enemies, wave after wave, different stuff, and every now and then you'd have a little objective to do, like go to download something off a computer or things like that. But it got quite boring very quickly. It was very much a poor man's Gears of War Horde.
Yeah.
Because I can still play the Horde mode a lot now and love it on Gears 3, whereas Mass Effect, it just got boring. There was only, what was it, 5-6 maps, is there?
Yeah.
You know, few maps.
Nothing mixes up at all. It's the
same
structure.
No,
same
thing over and over again. And for every match you play, your Galactic Readiness only goes up 4% at first and it drops to 3%. And obviously there is an achievement for getting to 100% as well for achievement hoarders like myself. But I mean, after so many, it just got so tedious because there's three levels. There's like a bronze, silver or gold. A bronze one would take you about 20 minutes.
Yeah.
That's the quickest you could complete, you know, complete a match in. Oh, I mean, because I played that much the multiplayer, I fucking hate it now, I don't want to play it.
Another few dumb things is there's no definitive way to level up, which was an absolute pisser that I hated. You're leveling up normally, it's the upgrading that annoyed me, how you have to buy these recruit packs to get new characters and unlock them.
And you could spend real money if you were desperate.
They had the cheek, like, I think they're expensive.
What the fuck?
They're expensive to get on credits wise.
Yeah.
Like, if you're just spending the credits. So as a little teaser, they said you could buy these packs for 79p each, but they're random. Like, I would much rather have unlocked the new races at certain level markers, so I like get to level 5 and unlock a Krogan or something, get to level 10 and unlock another character. But instead, I've got to keep buying these pissing packs and just hope that a character pops up. It's very cheap and annoying.
It's not very good. So I think they had the idea in the right place, and I'm glad they chose the multiplayer they did rather than just a standard deathmatch. But overall, could do without it. I bought it for the single player anyway.
Yep.
But haven't you got a bit of a story to do with the online? Some people you overheard?
Oh, yeah. unbelievably, one of the first games I played was two American guys talking. We were playing along and stuff, and then one of them just said, oh, how far are you up to on the single player? And then the guy was just like, I've not even touched it yet. I've not played any of the Mass Effect games ever. And he just bought this for the multiplayer because he says, oh, I like Gears of War Horde, so I thought I'd give this a crack. And I think he's going to be disappointed. I just hope
disappointed.
I hope for his sake he turns out he likes a single player, otherwise he's just dropped whatever it is, whatever the retail price to make, like $60 or something on a game that he's going to be bored with pretty soon.
Yeah.
So,
bad decision making.
Yeah, he did not the best decision he made. So anyway, we mentioned before the rip-off nature of the 79p for those bundles. There's also been the very contentious issue of the day one DLC in the form of, I don't even think this is a spoiler now.
It's called The Ashes.
It's called The Ashes, from The Ashes or something, yeah?
Yeah.
And I don't think it's a spoiler to say what it is.
I didn't know what it was.
But it's been very well marketed. Even like the press release even said what it was. And then when you load the game up, to be fair, it has that little box which has little news next to you. Sometimes it shows you galactic readiness. On one of them, it's like, why not try a Prothean and get this DLC pack? For me, I don't know where you stand, Mike, but I think it's a piss take that they left it out, because it's a Prothean. It's a massive thing that they're Prothean.
For the first two games, it's all been like, they're this ancient race, they were amazing, they were the dog's bollocks, they're all extinct, and yeah, oh, we got some DLC, by the way, where you can have one as a squad mate. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
What the fuck? Should that not be part of the main story?
So yeah, so they added that. $7.99 it cost on PSN, or you got it with a collector's edition. It's a bit of a joke. It's a big, as if it isn't bad enough that it's such a big deal that they bring the Protheans back.
Yeah.
What he adds to the game, there's so much. Like, I took him in my squad nearly everywhere just because of the context he added to a lot of scenes. There's one very crucial scene quite late on where you're looking for certain artifacts and stuff. And if he wasn't there, I don't feel like the scene would have been as good, because he was pointing me in the direction of things, explaining things, like really fleshing out the story and the narrative. The most annoying thing I find about the whole thing is, though, I didn't know if you know this, you can get him in the PC version without buying the DLC. He's in the game. You don't get his missions, but you can, if you tinker with a save file, you can get him as a playable character, and all his dialogue and every other scene's in there. So I think that proves how integral they want him to be, and how his fleshing out is meant to be meaningful.
It doesn't make sense, really, does it? No. You'd expect that he'd just be part of the main cast, you know, as part of your squad, integral to the end. Because it's like, if you don't buy that DLC, you're potentially missing out on a lot. Because, like you've said, he's got full dialogue scenes.
Mm-hmm.
The stuff that he adds, like in general cutscenes and things like that, it's a big insight, because obviously the Protheans were there. The last time the Reapers invaded the galaxy, he knows everything.
Like, it's an amazing scene. It's a small scene, but when you go to the Citadel, and he says, next time you're at the Citadel, come and have a chat with me.
Yeah.
And you just have it, he has a chat with you about how all the races have evolved since he was around. And it's fascinating. It fleshes everything out.
Yeah.
It's an incidental tiny scene, but it's missing if you don't have him.
Yeah.
It's a real shame. I wonder if it's, I don't want to cast aspersions on EA, but a lot of their games do come with day one DLC. And I just wonder if there's some, like, they'll obviously have product managers and stuff. And I just wonder if it's one of them where they've said, look, we need you to give us something to release as DLC day one. And they took that out. They could have chosen other things. They could have taken the Cerberus N7 missions out. Sold them as DLC, but I don't think people would have been as asked about buying them.
Mm-hmm.
I certainly wouldn't have done.
No, I mean, for me, because I got the collector's edition, it was part of that anyway. But obviously, for like yourself, you've paid some extra money from the standard release, haven't you, for it? I mean, mentioning about a squad member, actually, there's one thing which obviously some people may see as a plus to Mass Effect 3, others may see as a minus. You have a lot less squad characters to pick from. Obviously, Mass Effect 1, you only had so many, a couple. The Mass Effect 2 went way OTT.
Yeah,
you could pick loads, couldn't you? It was almost like too much choice.
Yeah.
But then with Mass Effect 3... Some of them
became totally redundant in the second game. They were the same character class as you. There was a couple that would be the same character class as you. You know that you're never going to use them.
Just look slightly different. But then Mass Effect 3, I don't know, it was...
I'm sure
what do you think of the squad choices? I mean, I only picked a few of the characters anyway.
I stuck with the same characters pretty much through the whole game. A little mixing up.
There's one new character in Mass Effect 3 who annoyed the shit out of me.
Oh, I think it's James?
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree.
Luckily, I only had to put up with him for the first few cutscenes of the game, and then I never used him again.
I think I took him on some of the N7 missions just because I thought I'd give him a little run around. He must get bored in that cargo hole. But he is a prick.
The N7 missions were just like the multiplayer maps, but were quite short and quick. But then the main story in Mass Effect 3 and the proper side missions that you could do really added a lot to the story, I thought, and were just generally excellent. There's one new character who was kind of introduced to Mass Effect 3, which I thought was Ace.
You can talk about it. We'll go into spoiler territory.
Should we go into spoiler
territory? We're approaching the time when we're going to start talking about the ending, so from here on in, the last few minutes of this show are going to be spoilerific.
If you
don't want to listen to ending spoilers or very specific character spoilers, then stop listening now. Thanks for listening. Come back next week.
Goodbye.
Okay, so for those of you that are still here.
So you're still here? Yeah, Edie. I thought, because I stayed so spoiler-free for Mass Effect 3, wasn't expecting her, But it was just, it was cool, it made so much sense, and for that whole game, it was Edie and Javik, the Prothean character, who were my squad for the whole game.
I liked the Edie thing. I have to admit, when everything first happened, I was like, shit, that VI thing, robot thing, has gone mental in the ship and he's overtaken over the ship. And I was really surprised when Edie just stepped up and was like, hi.
Yeah.
And I really loved the way you have to help and force her and Joker together.
Yeah.
I really liked that little subplot, that was really fun. Like Joker obviously got no confidence, Edie not understanding what all these feelings are and why she should be trying to do it. Fascinated me.
It was great. But the ending, Adam,
you're gonna have to get there.
Mass Effect 3, I'm already putting down as my potential game of the year just because it's fucking fantastic, to put it quite bluntly. Loved it, obviously I was playing it in depth, so I did all the side missions, did all the little mini stuff that you didn't have to do, just like hand something to someone to get a war asset or some credits.
Yeah.
But then the ending happened, and as the ending scene was going on, I was in a very what the fuck stage. I was a bit confused as to what was going on.
I was the same.
So then obviously I picked my ending, and then it ended, and I was just like, I felt betrayed almost. Yeah. It felt shit.
You see, as you know from what we initially talked about, I was very different. I liked it at first, even though it was confusing. I didn't have a problem with my decision, because I felt like I picked, we're going to come out here and say, so you end up with three choices. You can control the Reapers, you can destroy them, or you can combine your DNA with theirs and combine the world's universe.
And even then it wasn't straightforward, wasn't it? Because the controlling one was you died, but the Reapers would go away.
Died as well, I think.
Yeah, and the destruction one, it wouldn't just destroy the Reapers, it destroyed the Geth and all synthetic life. Yep. So would you argue here, Edie? She was synthetic.
Yeah, but I guess she would die.
Yeah. So I didn't want to pick that one for the simple fact that because I felt attached to the Geth with the whole Geth side plot with the Quarians and seeing into the Geth mind to know that really they were just defending themselves with the Quarians, which kind of proved themselves. And
you see, that did play, the kid that talks you through your choices does play on that, because that basically proves his point that organics are shit to machines and that machines will rise against them for their own fault. It's not like the Geths were dicks.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of why I picked the synthesis. I felt like the Quarian and the Geth plot line sort of drew you to that, and that subplot, and then you pushing Joker and Edie together. I was like, no, that feels natural. Man and machine should be one. I'm going to fucking throw myself in that pit and we're all going to join. And I was happy at that.
But even then, I felt it was a bit of a wrong. I can't describe it very well.
Like you said to me that you felt like it was
taking
choice away from.
It was just turning the whole universe into one
big happy blob.
Yeah. It ruins individuality, I think.
No, I can understand.
That's why I had a bit of a problem with that one.
So I went with that. But then I think the choices are irrelevant anyway. How they handled everything else made the ending feel very impersonal. There was no real after-game closure about what happened to all your friends, apart from one scene on a planet where some of them stepped off, didn't step off.
Yeah, which again, it was just a bit random. It felt the ending was rushed.
Mm-hmm.
Like they just threw in a few scenes. And that was it. And it's not necessarily how they've decided to end it. It was more, I just think it was executed really badly, because it made you feel confused. You weren't really sure what was going on. It was kind of thrown in your face. I mean, if you wanted to make the twist that everything, because then today it's been hinted several times, like Mass Effect 2, Mass Effect 3, it's inevitable. This has to happen. The cycle must continue. Mm-hmm. But in that respect, it was just how they went about it. And like you said, all three endings were pretty much the same, just with a few slight differences.
They needed to add more individualised post.
Yeah.
Even if it's something simple, after you make your decision, it does go through this little reel with some sad music showing a few of the characters, doesn't it?
Yep.
Why couldn't it just have a bit of text there? If that was if it was a rush job and they couldn't actually properly flesh it, just something to say Rex made it off Earth because you were loyal to him, or Rex didn't make it off Earth because you were loyal to him all the way through and he stayed till the end or something.
Things
like that, just to flesh out a bit more than just shitty little pictures to slow music.
Exactly. But a lot of theories have obviously come out since the ending. Indoctrination.
Yeah.
Which kind of, when you watch, there's a few good videos on the internet.
Maybe we could link to one in the show thing.
Possibly, yeah.
We can do that.
Yeah. And
let that magic happen.
And it makes sense that the ending is all indoctrinated and none of it's real. In which case, it's fucking amazing.
Yeah.
Ending. But again, it comes down to the whole execution.
Yeah.
And it's a bit...
And it's a real... If that's what they intended, it's a real shame that they didn't quite pull it off, that it's caused all this controversy,
yeah,
that they've had to come out and because say... Because it could have been left to hang either for DLC or even until the next iteration of the franchise. It could have been left, and that would have been awesome.
Yeah.
Because they didn't signpost it well enough.
Because the ending did feel weird.
Yeah.
Obviously, you run into the beam, obviously, that's all real, and then you've been knocked to the ground. That's all the little things, wasn't it, when you hear people say no one's made it, they're
yeah,
all dead, the Reaper, which I'm assuming was harbouring at Harbinger,
yeah,
flies away. You know, and then you're on the Citadel, and it was just all weird, wasn't it?
Yeah.
The corridors full of human bodies. And
even before that as well, rewind, when you were in London, there was no grass on the floor.
Oh, yeah.
And suddenly
yeah,
grass has appeared that looks eerily similar to the nightmares you have throughout
yeah,
the game.
Oh, I'm obviously thinking out loud, you go back to the whole kid at the start
yeah,
when you're on Earth. I just assumed he was real, and it was a scene to show Saturn, like the impact of the war, and it's a play on it. But then... Anderson didn't notice anyone
Anderson,
or didn't hear
yeah,
him.
It, didn't hear him when you were talking to him in the vent, and if you listen really carefully, you do hear the Reaper noise going,
hmm,
which is weird. Anderson didn't notice him then, but the weird one was when he goes and gets on the
shuttle,
and nobody's even like, you'd think, like you'd said, I think you said when we talked before, somebody would be picking him up like he's a,
yeah, he's a kid.
He's a war orphan refugee. Somebody
yeah,
would grab him. He
mm-hmm,
wouldn't just sneak in like that.
Yeah.
And then that's the other thing that's weird about the nightmares. At first, I was taking them as, oh, it's Shepherd feeling guilty about that
mm-hmm,
this kid could have died. Whether the kid was real or not, he's feeling that feeling of guilt.
Yep.
So I thought maybe the kid like was a manifestation of his guilt for leaving Earth or something. But then I soon realised, if you're a renegade character, you're a fucking asshole. You're not going to be having that regret.
Yeah.
So why are BioWare suddenly trying to shove this regret onto a renegade character?
Yeah, who's an arse.
So I definitely have no doubt in my mind that it's now part of the indoctrination process. And the real scene for me that does the indoctrination justice is the elusive man in Anderson. First, it makes no fucking sense. Why is Anderson there? How did he get there?
Yeah, exactly. It's like, how is he there? How is he ahead of Shepard?
Yeah.
I mean, I think Anderson does say that the walls are changing and stuff like that, but
mm-hmm,
it's just, the beam would only take you to one place, surely. I can't imagine
yeah,
they create some beam.
And he says he's behind you, doesn't he? Or
yeah,
I must have, and he's not. And then when he says the structure's changing, suddenly it changes.
Yeah.
Which is really weird. So Anderson's there, and then the elusive man just pops out of nowhere.
Like,
in front
hey,
of me, just like, hey. And that's the killer scene for me, when you're watching it, and you realise Anderson and the elusive man aren't actually talking to each other.
Yep.
They're talking to you. Like, at first, like, there's the one crucial bit where I noticed this. Anderson says, you're indoctrinated, and he shouts. And when he says that, it makes no sense to what the elusive man has just said. He's talking to you. The elusive man's talking to you. They're both talking to you.
Yeah.
And at the time as well, Shepard bends over holding his head. He's like,
I think we need to extend this episode.
The klaxon has gone off. So anyway, so this is all going on. And Shepard a couple of times keels over like holding his head. And if
yeah,
you read through the indoctrination thing and the codex, it says that you're prone to severe headaches and
yep,
stuff. I mean, you could just say, no, he's got a headache from the beam and stuff. But really, the timing of it all seems like...
Yeah, and it's like, even little scene, again, I didn't really notice it, where Shepard shoots, in inverted commas,
mm-hmm,
Anderson. And then when it's all done and he sat down, Shepard puts his hand to the exact area of the body where Anderson was shot. And he's got fresh blood on his hand.
Yeah.
Now, Shepard was injured when he was on the Citadel walking forward, but he didn't have a wound giving off fresh
no,
blood like that. And I mean, it's just all that kind of stuff makes sense. And if they just ended it better, if that's the angle they wanted to go with, fucking amazing. You know, for all these games, you've been the hero, it's trying to save the day, and then right at the end, it's a bit like, you're indoctrinated as well, tough shit.
Yeah.
But it could have been brilliant. We discussed it as well, didn't we? If it just played out the scene very similar to how it had done, but just maybe something a little bit more obvious to make it look like you're indoctrinated. Not.
I think for me the crucial thing is the very, very end.
Mm-hmm.
If you pick destroy the Reapers, that's
yep,
the only...
Oh, we don't listen to that.
Hello. If you pick the Renegades, what they're presenting as the Renegade choice, because the Reapers are indoctrinating you and trying to make you feel like destroying them would be a bad thing.
Mm-hmm.
If you pick the Renegade choice, that's the only option that hints that Shepard's still alive.
Yeah.
If they'd have done that for the other two choices, which incidentally, if you think about it, what's his name? Saren, is it? From the first game?
Saren, yeah.
Yep, Saren and the Elusive Man's choices. That's what the blue and the green represent, effectively.
Mm-hmm.
If you picked either of them, they've had a little post-credit scene similar to that, but just even showing Shepard laid on the floor on Earth and his eyes opening is clearly indoctrinated
yeah,
or him coming around and suddenly Reaper ships are destroying Earth. Just something that hinted, that gave that little post hint at what. It's just weird how the Renegade is the only one that has.
Yeah, exactly. And it's like, I mentioned Inception a couple of times, so obviously a brilliant film, which I'm sure most of you have seen it. But obviously that ends where you think everything is real and good, and then it just shows the little table spinny thing where he says that's his tell. If that doesn't stop spinning,
he knows he's
in the dream world, but he doesn't wait for it to finish and walks away, and it just rocks slightly, but it doesn't stop, and the film ends, and it's fantastic because you're like, oh shit, was that world real? Has he fallen into his own mind, which is the general theme of the film. Why, if they'd just done something like that enough to make it obvious to everyone, like, oh fuck, it could have been brilliant, because they could have release another Mass Effect game set later in the timeline, not Shepard's story anymore, someone else. So there's so much stuff they could have done.
Yeah, and then whatever choice you made impacts the universe's starting point, so to speak, for the future games.
Yeah,
they didn't. So,
and that's why I think that I just can't believe they didn't. They expected the ending to be.
It seems like a rush job. There's all rumours going around that, or some of them aren't rumours, that pretty much confirm that they did change the ending at some point. Only the two lead writers knew the ending right up until the release. So they obviously have a team of writers that have been writing everything else, not necessarily knowing what ending they were working towards.
Mm-hmm.
They could have signposted it throughout the game a little bit better, like show more hints of indoctrination in the previous games even.
Yeah.
Because if you think about it, Shepard has been in contact with the Reapers more than any fucking person has ever.
He's been in like Prothean beacons, he's spoken to Sovereign.
There's the bit in the Arrival DLC where he gets knocked out for God knows how long.
Yeah, by that artifact thingamajig.
And they did say the Arrival DLC was important.
Yeah.
And it ultimately, what ends in that DLC isn't that important. But I think people are missing the point. It was the middle bit where he gets knocked out by the Reaper tech that's the important bit that would have a lasting effect.
Yeah.
Not the fact that he decided to destroy this mass relay.
Yeah.
So yeah, this is a lot.
There was them theories as well, though, wasn't there, about the ending didn't make a lot of sense. All the Mass Effect relays got destroyed.
Mm-hmm.
Going off the Arrival DLC, surely a lot of soul systems
have been
wiped out with it.
But then you could argue if you're doing it by destroying the Reapers, there's some other way they can collapse in on themselves or something.
Yeah.
That's me definitely placing my own meaning. but then I don't have a problem. I know people are like, that's shit, the universe is fucked. But fuck it, you're breaking a millennia-long cycle.
Mm-hmm.
There's got to be some repercussion. And they even hinted, though, that the Protheans had managed to make versions of Mass Effect relays.
Mass Effect drives.
Yeah. And they've made Mass Effect drives, obviously. So it's not the end of the fucking universe. It's just, you're breaking this cycle. There's got to be some repercussions.
Yeah.
You're not having a happy-go-lucky ending like Penny Arcade portrayed in their cartoon where everyone's eating fucking cake.
I mean, I first didn't like the whole, all the Mass Effect relays got destroyed no matter what ending you pick. But, yeah, potentially, I'd still accept that. It's just if the overall execution
went,
you know, a bit better. Obviously, they would have struggled with making different choices with the ending if the indoctrination theory was how they'd gone with. But I still think they could have put a lot of variety on the ending depending on what kind of character you were.
Mm-hmm.
You know. Because, going back to the whole indoctrination thing, it made a point as if you choose destroy, the fucking ghost kid disappeared straight away.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, and the fact that he looks like the kid at the start of the game.
Well, that's just playing on the dreams being part of the indoctrination.
Yeah,
because they obviously think
Shepard's
impressionable.
In inverted commas, the control one. It almost seems like he smirks.
Yeah, and
like basically he's
and
done.
Fades away gradually.
Yeah,
whereas
like,
in destroying him, he just dissipates straight away, like you've destroyed the Reapers.
So yeah, I'm quite happy with the indoctrination theory. It's just
at first I doubted it.
I
thought no, people are just placing, but it's the only thing that makes sense.
There is so much stuff which makes sense.
The other two games are so well written, and
it's
the three so well written. They can't.
Yeah.
All the plot loops and stuff that are there, they can't be explained away with anything other than indoctrination.
Yeah, like I said, the whole blood thing with the it's like they wouldn't forget that. It's such an obvious.
And the thing is, if it isn't indoctrination, they need to fucking latch onto that and use
it.
If for some terrible reason this is just god awful writing, they need to just latch onto the indoctrination theory and pretend that's what it was all along and then fucking keep it quiet.
But then even with that, with all the massive petitions and all this stuff, they have said that they're going to expand on the ending now or in some way or explain it a bit better. Which is a bit unprecedented, I suppose, for a company to do that, but
Bethesda did it with Fallout.
Yeah.
And it was terrible.
Yeah. I just kind of accepted it though with Fallout.
Yeah. I liked the ending to Fallout 3.
Yeah. I think it was just a way of getting more DLC out, to be honest, rather than
But it was annoying that you couldn't play post-game.
Yeah, it was.
Sorry, but, I turned somewhere to that, but they didn't need to add a whole new
BioWare, I don't know what you were thinking. the ending, the whole indoctrination thing would have been fantastic. I think most fans, you would have, some maybe would have been disappointed, but would have come round to it and just thought, wow, it would have been a massive, brilliant talking point.
Mm-hmm.
But because you didn't make it obvious it was indoctrination, this has only come from people analysing it. Like you said, the whole in the rubble thing, why only show that at the destruction ending?
Because
that wasn't Citadel rubble around you, you were still on Earth.
Yeah.
That was you. And how, left
Earth. There was all rock and mortar, it wasn't metal.
No, exactly. You definitely never left Earth.
Yeah, you definitely never left Earth.
Yeah, it showed your armour scarred, your N7 tag. And
so then I don't know what else they could do. Like, will the post-game DLC be if you pick the Renegade decision, you wake up in the rubble, and then you actually run on the Citadel and do it?
Yeah.
Because you've obviously not even been to the Citadel yet. So no. There's nothing you can stop to do. You're on that beam now. Mm-hmm. Presumably they haven't taken the Citadel. So do they add DLC that if you do that ending, then you run into the beam for real, they're attacking the Citadel or something, and you have to try and make your way to this room to destroy them all before they destroy the Citadel? That would be more interesting and make it seem more believable.
Yeah, who knows?
The only thing is, I hope I'm not having to fucking pay for it. Like I said to you before, I've already bought the game. I spent $7.99 on the DLC, and I also bought the iPod game for $4.99. I feel like I've invested enough that if they want to rewrite the ending, I shouldn't have to pay for it again. And then you bought the collector's edition, so you're very heavily invested.
£64.
It's a bit of a piss take if they start charging for it.
Yeah.
Which may have been their original intention, but whether they can get away with it now after all this is debatable.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that's quite nice to come to the end of Mass Effect of Fun.
Mass Effect of Fun.
Mass Effect of Fun.
So we are done talking about Mass Effect.
Yeah.
We will be back next week, I assume, Mike.
Well, we certainly shall.
For more video gaming shenanigans.
We will, indeed.
So, we'll not do our little roundup thing because we are done.
Way over 30 minutes.
well, never mind. It's a one-off special, never-to-be-repeated event.
We've broken
the cycle, Mike.
I see what you did there, Adam. I saw you did there.
Right. Bye from me, then.
Bye from me.
Laters.
Laters.